Hi, everybody. Welcome to this very special episode of React Native Radio Chicago Edition. I'm your host, Peter Pikarczyk, and today on our panel, we have Don Goro from Aphid Studios and Rob Volk from Foxbox Digital.
Infinite Red is a US-based consultancy specializing in React and React Native. They do mobile app and web design and development. They are deeply involved in the React and React Native open source communities, publish the React Native newsletter with 10,000 subscribers, and are involved with the React Native core development. If you have a project and need design or engineering help from an experienced team to take it all the way from concept to completion, get in touch with Infinite Red. Also check out Chain React, the React Native conference, which is hosted by Infinite Red in July in Portland with 500 developers from all around the world. You can find them at infinite.red. Make sure to mention you heard about them in this ad.
Hey, Peter, you know, this is the first time I've ever heard his name. Like, thank God he finally said it. I see an email all the time and I try to pronounce it. I must look like an idiot sitting at my desk going, can you do it again? What's it?
Pikarczyk.
Pikarczyk.
In all my presentations, I'll always put like a picture of a pie, a picture of a car, and a picture of a baby chicken.
You know, then Pikarczyk.
Oh, yeah. Pies, cars, and chicks.
Pikarczyk. I studied Polish for a year and I couldn't get your name out. I couldn't do it.
That's funny. Okay, I guess we'll start that again.
Yeah,
we're good. That's great. No, yeah, we're recording. We're good.
I mean, that was Rob screwing up. We'll just clap his head so you get a little thing.
Yeah.
So I can start.
Yeah.
One of the reasons that I came to you, Peter, originally was I'm getting pushed by my leadership team and by my development team, some members of my development team, to figure out React Native, to figure out some kind of cross-platform solution. In the past, I've always pushed back against Xamarin and PhoneGap, mostly because I didn't like them. React Native has got staying power. I've seen cool stuff done in React Native. I've read cool stuff about it. But I worry about us being able to pull off the fidelity we're used to with React Native. So I guess one of my questions for the both of you is, how much code reuse do you get on larger applications? Maybe 20, 30 screen apps.
Code reuse between like web and mobile, or like what kind of reuse?
No, I'm sorry, just on the mobile. So if you're going between iOS and Android, and you have to drop down into native occasionally, mm-hmm. and I've got a story about that in a minute.
Yeah.
How often does that happen? And are you looking at 100% code reuse on everything you build?
For the most part, for any of the apps that we built with DraftBid, we haven't had it gone on native for anything. Expo is looking really well. So you could use, there's a lot of these JavaScript primitives, right? Like view, image, animation, video, a variety of things, like camera, that all have like the best version of that native module written.
Okay.
That is then exposed on the JavaScript side. And that's supposed to cover, let's say, 80% of the use cases, right?
Yeah.
But then, it really depends on your use case too, because obviously there are things that, you do have to drop down native for, if you've got specific SDKs that you want to use, or, let's say you can't get the animation performance that you're looking for if you've got a lot going on the screen, right? There are definitely, still valid cases for dropping down to native.
But you never do it.
No.
I've never done it either. Yeah. I mean, so we've dropped down to native too. So I have one client where we had to build a React Native bridge to an existing mobile SDK. And so that was a huge process. It took, weeks to do. Basically, we had to build the JavaScript bridge for both the iOS app and the Android app. And then, make that consumable to pull into our React Native app. So that was a big process to drop down native, but that was the first time, the only time I ever had to do that. Basically, we have, 95% code reuse between two platforms. It's the same, single code base in JavaScript, and then you'll have some conditionals maybe to have slightly different styling around JavaScript, iOS or Android.
Yeah.
And then if you want to have maybe the drawer navigation versus the bottom tabs, so you can switch that up.
Okay.
Basically, it's the same thing. And I would love to see an example of when you would need to drop down to native. So build just maybe a screen or a small experience.
Yeah, yeah. And I can definitely show you what some of our apps look like later. But I think the what I ran into, so I was doing a special side project last week.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, and I channeled Pierre off, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try React Native because I'm doing a small side project for a company as kind of like a friend thing. And kind of like to get my head back in the game a little bit. And as the senior consultant in the room, I was like, I should do this in React Native because that will give me Android and iOS out of the box. And it'd be a big win for both of us. And then I don't have to maintain an Android code base. So I did it. And one of the things I had to do I needed a self signed SSL cert to make it through to work with a development server on my laptop. So I got it all working, and I got it working on the native iOS because it's a bit of a pain to do that. And then I scrolled into React Native, and I needed to, I was using the WebView, which is backed by WK WebView, and I needed to drop into native to do delegation because the delegate calls were handling the authentication process for that cert. And all of a sudden I was like, well, this is the smallest app in the world that I could build right now. And I needed to drop to native within 2 hours of starting.
So I'm curious to know if you needed to drop there or if you dropped there because that's the tool that you know how to use.
You mean, could I have just like done the certificate differently?
I don't suppose so. Yeah. I don't even know what you're talking about with the local certificate.
Yeah, same here.
Oh. So you should just configure it automatically. So.
Yeah.
So iOS won't talk to anything that's not SSL right now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if you're running a dev server,
mm-hmm.
you have got to iOS, I think 12 and up needs you to be SSL. It's really, really finicky about not SSL. So
just run your dev server.
From the dev server, yeah. Right. So right now the hack is to generate a self-signed server.
Yeah.
Self-assigned certificate.
Which iOS is also going to reject. Right.
Yeah, you still got exactly. So iOS messes with it still, but you can and you can delegate in the WK Review, you can delegate out and pretty much ignore or just kind of like spoof that and say this is okay.
In development mode, doesn't it
turn it off?
Yeah.
So Expo will turn off that flag for you. So you
really?
Can send HTTP calls. React Native, you open up. I remember like opening up an Xcode and like in dev mode, turn this flag off.
Yeah.
That's how we used to do it.
Expo
just does it for you automatically. Like we hit our, like non-SSL servers all the time. Just like HTTP.
Oh my gosh. I should have called you guys.
Yes.
Yeah. And just before this, Rob said, well, you should use Expo. And I'm like, I guarantee Expo will not solve this problem. And
so,
now
so,
I'm
yeah.
eating like,
yeah. Expo is a phenomenal way to start. It provides like kind of React Native with, bumpers. It allows you to avoid a lot of the headaches that, come along with React Native when you're trying to dive down in native code. Usually that's because people don't know the native code. You know the native code, but it still provides just a safer environment.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually you hit some sort of limits where you need to integrate Stripe or, a marketing push service or something. And then, you have some options around that. But if you're getting started, I recommend just start with Expo.
Hmm. So now we got Expo is the answer.
That's why we're doing this.
Expo is,
9 times out of 10, Expo is the answer. They're a great team.
So I'm curious to know about, so the apps that we build are mostly, straightforward apps. We'll use well-known UX patterns around navigation, around just mobile in general.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, and that's a great fit for React Native, right? We get data from an API, we display it in a list, you scroll around, you interact with it. Like those are things that are really well suited for React Native. I'm curious to know, like, what do you think beyond that, you would need to do for your clients, your native
part? So our design team is pretty aggressive about taking existing or new-ish design, and I mean visual design patterns, and breaking them out a little bit,
mm-hmm.
kind of like doing something visually stand out from the crowd. That's what we're doing for our clients. So a couple of examples are maybe like a swipe up card flip that you've got. It's almost like a stack of cards that's rotating from the bottom up into place on the screen, and doing it with drop shadows and some anamorphic movement so that it looks like it's being placed into place. And these are very specific animations coming from our designers and then through our animator. So, and that took, it was a layup with iOS because we found a framework that allowed us to get 90% of the way.
Right.
And on Android, it took us about 3 weeks.
Yes, yeah. I would have no idea how to solve it with React Native. My solution would be to tell the UX guy to show.
Yes, and yes, and if we were a purely dev shop, I would have that luxury.
Yeah.
But I know better. Like, we get, you know, our dev team doesn't win awards. Our UX and design teams win awards.
That's
what people see us for.
Is your dev team going to be offended when they hear this?
Oh, no, not at all. No, everyone's on the same team. And here's the deal. Like what I love about the way that we run things is that design and UX come up with these amazing interactions, and the dev team makes them sing and makes them live and breathe. And the merge of those two skills just makes it such solid work, and it feels so strong. You know, if you let a developer loose, the best thing you're going to do is use some, you know, prescriptive animations or something and call it a day. I wouldn't anyway. It's the limit of my creativity.
Right, yeah. We need to work together to really, you know, create something that's usable and beautiful and it works.
Right? Yeah. I mean, occasionally we'll get where the design going into dev doesn't match the scope and the budget. And so the designer and the dev will sit down and figure out how they can hit closest to it, and both will come to an agreement. But yeah, we never tell a team to, like, you know, cool the jets. That's kind of like off brand for us.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. There are a few different ideas that come to mind. So there's this tool called Lottie that Airbnb made. Okay, so,
yeah,
you know, like the Premiere Pro, they've got this Premiere Pro thing, turns this JSON,
yep,
and then you place it in your app.
Yep.
Expo supports Lottie out of the box. I don't know if the animations are as fluid.
Well, I don't think Lottie will. So in that instance, in the instance I described, we're actually animating. That's a really good question, actually. Whether or not Lottie can animate images like that. I really don't know. I know we use it a lot for animations, a lot for like explainer animations or onboarding type things. But I don't know if it can do. And now that I'm thinking about talking you off of this solution, I now realize that I don't know how they did it. I don't know if they animated view controllers. That seems kind of heavy to me, but
yeah. I guess then the second one, which probably would work, but may not have like the FPS that you'd like, maybe it would, but I don't know, is Reanimated. So one of the core Expo developers created this new API that lets you write React code the way you know and love, but the props that you pass are like timing, like rotation, and all the different animation props that you'd like. So, you know, like if, say you're navigating to a screen and you want things to subtly appear from the bottom and you want to stagger, right? So you want like the title to show up first and then like half a second later have this, and like a, you know, a third of a second have this show up. He's done a very good job with the API to do that, because it's just like view, and then like transition delay, like, you know, 300, transition delay 500, transition delay 1 second, right? And perhaps maybe in this case, if you have these, you would be animating the views themselves, right? At least the React Native views as we know them. I believe that Reanimated uses like the native animation driver for both iOS and Android. So you could try that out. You can kind of like whip it up and see if it'll look. It may not, you know, like I know there's always going to be the overhead of going over the bridge, right? Like, it's really hard for React Native to get the frames per second that like a good iOS developer will always notice React Native app over a native app, right? Like, you will notice it, you know, like so there's that part of it, right? And then it's just a matter of like what's good enough, you know. But yeah, that would be like a, if it's not good enough, that is a good case for native.
Isn't that going to change though soon with the new JSI bridge,
where it's
avoid the JavaScript layer as much as possible and send things?
Yeah, that's intriguing.
Yeah.
So for everybody that doesn't know, React Native has been going through a rewrite, And the core team,
for those who don't know, for those who don't hang out with Peter ever, because it's all he ever talks about.
The core team at Facebook has basically been focused on doing a rewrite of the way that the bridge works right now. Right now, there's one bridge, and you basically got these like RPC calls that take your JavaScript instructions and convert them to native instructions, right? And we write these header files if we want to. Expo writes those header files for us, right? But anyway, that's where a lot of the bottlenecks lived. So for the last year, they have been breaking down React Native Core. They've been pulling out modules, and they have been rewriting this bridge to be able to break it down to like many bridges, right? So like a view will have its own like view bridge, which will be smaller, lighter, it'll pass less information. You know, at least from like the spec, it's supposed to, you know, get rid of most of the bottlenecks that React Native developers face and deal with.
Interesting.
And so that is like, you know, like around the corner. You know, there never is a release date for these things. It's like it'll be released when it's ready, but you know, they've been doing a very good job of getting there. And I imagine that it's like a couple months away from being released.
Hmm. Yeah. It's a good option for the future for you.
Yeah. So you started me thinking, because I'm trying to challenge everything you're saying in my mind. Like, all right, well, can it handle this and can it handle that? So I'm going to throw one more thing out. There's an animation we're building for. We're working with a medical marijuana company. Cool. And the interface, they went kind of nuts. The guy specifically came to us for that. He's like, I want your design team to go crazy. And they did. And so our lead iOS developer, and we're only building iOS at this time, kept up and delivered, like over-delivered. It's
wow.
Kind of amazing. And one of the things he used was a particle emitter. Uh-huh. Because of there's some effective states that they want to monitor for the users as they're using the vape. And the particle emitter is supposed to determine, it's supposed to denote time and concentration and effects. So the particle emitter's got maybe 3 or 4 vectors that it's displaying on the screen. Can you do that kind of thing with...
In terms of, like, can you describe a little more about, like, are you talking about just like having like a bunch of dots show up?
Yep.
When I think of
yep.
particles.
That's
okay.
Exactly. Yeah. The very basic of a particle emitter with no like texturing or anything.
So there is like WebGL support, right? And maybe like even some GL support for like the Expo has bundled already, right? So that's a possible option.
Does WebGL keep up with the frame rate?
I think so, because it may not be WebGL, maybe like whatever GL that the native platforms have, you know, with the same API as WebGL.
Oh, I see what you mean.
So there's that may work, right? So, and that all goes onto native code. I know that like ARKit is supported in Expo too.
Oh.
Right? So what you do is you draw...
Because it would have to be, right?
Yeah. You draw like your models and stuff in JavaScript, and then it like turns it into like Evan Bacon at last year's JS camp demoed this, and he like turned my face into a lion, you know. So you know, and it's got the, you know, like the iOS is like the little dots when it's trying to like find the thing, like all that stuff is exposed, you know, and they work on an API that makes this a lot easier for you. So this is me shooting at the hip and thinking about you may ultimately find that the particle emitter library that you're using has a React Native extension,
yeah.
And you can just like, oh, I'm just going to drop this in, you know, and then write whatever I need to on the JavaScript end.
Right.
So,
all right. I got a question from Rob.
Yeah.
So when would you not use React Native? Because you've done native, you've done React Native.
I've never done native, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Charlie was native.
I'm like a web developer, you know, turned into a React Native consultant shop. And so
I'm alone. I am alone in this room.
I've done native.
You've done native. Oh,
yeah.
Well, I was trying to get Rob in the conversation a little bit.
Yeah. One of the first apps I built was native. And it was like fine, you know.
So
like,
when would you not go? When would you go native? When would you say this is a good use? This has got to be native, or this is preferable native.
I usually say like for games or something, you know, it's really interactive like that and really animated, and you know, it's not a simple like, you know, listing interactive data. This is like a fully immersive kind of experience. Like I think a game is a great solution, a great example of that.
Yeah, that's a really great example.
Yeah.
Games, I don't think, you know, you can build like the Mario game where you're like jumping over like
right.
the plumbing things,
yeah.
right? Like you can do that.
You so the side scroller pixel.
You can, but
yeah.
right. Yeah.
But you know, like some of the games that people like know and love to play on these platforms, like you definitely need native for that.
Anything consumer facing that's not gaming then? Or would you just say you all React Native all the time?
I mean, our go-to is React Native. People come to us because, you know, we're React Native experts.
So why do they do that? Like, why do they seek out the technology first?
Because yeah, I think there's a few things. One is, you know, they want to build something. They want to maintain two platforms, right? Either this is a smaller app or it's a bigger app, but they just don't have two completely separate
yeah.
engineering teams.
Okay.
You know, two is that, you know, it's like sometimes it's overkill to just go full native and you don't need to invest that much in it. So it's definitely a cost savings is a big thing. I think this, and I don't know it, but I think that it can be faster to build a React Native app than just a straight iOS app.
I think it depends on
yeah, but it probably depends. You know, if you're staying kind of within the confines and not going too outside, you know,
yeah.
a lot of things you describe, like you could use React Native, but should you want? I don't know.
Right. Well, and I remember you, Rob, just talking me through whether or not, if somebody could guess whether or not a screen was built in React Native, and their feedback was, it's probably React Native because laying that out in native iOS would be a huge pain. That is something I definitely get.
Yeah, so that was from our friend Kieran, who's supposed to be here today, but was too busy.
Oh, yeah.
So, wow. yeah.
Is this all right? Can we shout
yeah,
out to
yeah,
Kieran?
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, Kieran. You were supposed to back me up on this, and I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, you're too busy and we're not. I don't know.
He was the balance of the conversation.
Yeah.
He was the too native
yeah.
versus the too React Native.
He's a nice guy, but he really screwed me over.
Yeah.
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 yeah. yeah.
Not so nice. So, yeah. So I showed him a Home Chef's new app that we built in React Native. And I said, hey, like, you know, interact with this, you know, play around with the horizontal, the vertical scrolling on the screen and tell me if you can tell that this is a React Native app. And he said, yes, actually, this part is, there's so much laid out on the screen with different sizes and everything so close. And this says something about it said that it would just be so time consuming and native that it's probably not native.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very insightful. That was very, no. And when you told me he said that, that blew my mind too, because I was like, oh God, if you can really get that kind of, that if you're really getting the web assisted layout, what I'll call it now, in mobile, because mobile is a huge pain. iOS is a huge pain in the ass to work with because of the way they work with constraints.
It's like laying things out on the screen. It's a joy. It's all. It's like CSS.
You giggle when you do it. It's like enjoying.
It is a lot of fun.
It's like,
seriously,
it's
yeah.
like CSS, but the new modern Flexbox CSS without any of the old horrible CSS.
Really.
And so, you know, it's all Flexbox, it all stretches to fit. So basically it's going to work on, you know, all screen sizes with minor adjustments here and there, even
yeah.
for the bottom little bar and stuff like that. But it's really easy to get those laid out. And it's all laid out in code. There's no like WYSIWYG editor, which always seems like a good idea.
WYSIWYG. Oh, here we go.
There we go.
There is, Rob, and it's called DraftBit.
But you can do it in code, and that's a nice thing about that.
When I'm building a new product, G2I is the company that I call on to help me find a developer who can build the first version. G2I is a hiring platform run by engineers that matches you with React, React Native, GraphQL, and mobile engineers who you can trust. Whether you are a new company building your first product or an established company that wants additional engineering help, G2I has the talent you need to accomplish your goals. Go to devchat.tv/G2I to learn more about what G2I has to offer. In my experience, G2I is linked up with experienced developers that can fit my budget, and the G2I staff are friendly and easy to work with. They know how product development works and can help you find the perfect engineer for your stack. Go to devchat.tv/G2I to learn more about G2I.
Yes, I mean, you can do it in code in iOS too. I'm just trying to, like, in my mind, trying to salvage my career and my value to society.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I do have something for
you. Oh, do you? Oh,
yeah.
Please.
That would
be
very excited about.
Okay.
So, the engine that powers the React Native layout is called Yoga, right? Flexbox. It's flexible. It works across platforms, right? Like,
yeah.
Yoga. Anyway, Yoga works on the web, right? Not many people use it on the web, but you can use Yoga on the web.
Yeah.
You can use Yoga in React Native, but there's also Component Kit, which is a native iOS version of Yoga, which is very nice. You've got a very similar API, but all in like Objective-C. And then the same thing for Android using Litho. And these are both like Facebook libraries. So Facebook does not rewrite things, right? There's no such thing as a feature-free rewrite, right? So the Facebook app for the longest time has been, it's been Objective-C++ using like things like Component Kit and whatever they need, right? New features are starting to become React Native, like Marketplaces. It's a React Native app running inside the beast of the Facebook app. But anyway, I'm going off topic here. If you wanted to use this like joyful layout editor instead of auto layout or whatever, you could just use Yoga through a Component Kit on the Objective-C side.
That was supposed to make me feel more relevant.
Well, you know, if you don't have to use React Native, you could use the layout.
No, I'm not anti-React Native. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I am, no, I'm not at all. I am trying to guard the heart and soul of 8-bit. I'm trying to guard that which we deliver to our clients, which by and large is our the fidelity of our design and user experience through technology. So if I can deliver that in other mediums, I'm all open to that. The progenitors to React Native have delivered. Xamarin.
Yeah.
Phone Gap, which is out of
Ionic.
Ionic, yeah. They didn't cut it for me. If you're simple, it's fine. But the more you use the app, the more memory starts getting used, the lower your frame rate drops. And doing anything like even close to something, two instances that I described, was cost prohibitive.
Absolutely.
So I'm not against it at all.
Yeah.
I'm simply trying to find the, like, when it makes sense to use it and when are we going to get our asses handed to us with budget. Like saying, oh, we could build this, we just build it once. And then we end up with like, you know, 40 to 50% code reuse, which isn't bad.
Yeah.
If you don't plan for that, it can really mess you up.
I would say like, if there's going to be, you know, 80%+ code reuse in React Native and just a little bit in Native where you drop down, then, you know,
that's obviously a win.
Yeah. Then it's a win. If it's any less, like, you know, when Airbnb switched off of React Native, it was a big blow to the whole community. And the Oracle's like, oh, Airbnb dishes React Native. And I was like, oh, you know, fuck React Native. But no, if you read the article at the end, they're like, hey, like, it's a phenomenal technology. It's just not a great fit for us.
Right.
Because they were using like 5% React Native. The rest of it was native. And guess what? There's obviously a cost between using two technologies. If you have native and React Native, you have to have this, you know, this layer between the two. And then, you know, your developers are coding in a third, you know, language.
Right.
So,
right.
So there's a cost to it. So if it's 5% of the app, yeah, that doesn't make sense. I agree with you, Airbnb. Right?
Yeah.
I think they said 30%. That's kind of where my metric was.
So there you go. Yeah. I mean, I'd say anything under, you know, 50-80%, you know, you should really be leveraging it.
Well, it's not that, like, the percentage is pretty good. Like, if I could say 50% of this code base is shared between two platforms, that's amazing, actually. It's the lack of predictability going into what that's going to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't allow you to approach an architectural certainty that will allow you to plan for that on the budget side. That's what worries me initially.
I think for you, what I would do is really just take some of these, you know, more complex examples and try to spike it out on the weekend. You know, give some people on the bench, you know, some time to just build this.
Yeah, I agree.
firsthand. But a third, another issue or another thing, consideration is, you know, you have iOS, you have Android. I don't know if you have like one team that can do everything or if you have two separate teams.
Two separate teams with people who are
right. And then, so I have that too. I have my Elixir team and my React Native team, right? And so the problem with that is I have two teams to manage budgets on. You would need to have a third React Native team.
It's funny because the people that are A, gravitating towards React Native, and B, making the time for it and actually experimenting with it are the web team.
Like, yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's natural.
Yeah.
And just to sort of like round out the Airbnb thing, what folks don't realize is like Airbnb already had like 40 native iOS and Android developers.
Right. Yeah.
Right. They're a huge, rich company.
Which is, you know, like if you have that, then yeah, maybe you shouldn't use React Native because you can do everything. Like you've got the experience, you've got the time, you've got the energy.
Yeah.
Right. And it was more of an uphill battle for them trying to persuade people to give it a shot. Right. Like any technology is successful. I feel like if there are folks that want to use it, right, you can't force it. You know, there's always been that like tension. Like I'm an iOS developer. I will never use React Native. Like, fuck you guys, right?
Right.
This guy.
Whoa, what did he say? He's a listening audience. Please don't hate me. Anti-technology. Actually, that's not true. There are technologies that I don't like and I've never used. I've used them. Don't make an RSMA. COBOL is one of them. Visual Basic is one of them. Python. I know I'm going to catch shit for Python, but I'm not a big fan of Python and how it works. So I feel like I've laid my soul bare.
I've used VB and it was awful, but it was a great way to start. It was a great way to start. It's like, okay, this is interesting.
So,
yeah.
God. Just nasty. Sorry. I'm not sorry for hitting VB.
I agree.
It's only really the 40-year-olds out there that started their career in the 90s that are going to be upset that I said that. Small niche group of people there. So what I'm hearing then is that almost you're saying that you maybe need a reason for React Native, like am I hearing this right? Like, because you were saying like you got the budget,
it's the right tool for the right job, right? It's the right tool for the job.
So let's not try to figure out like what's the wrong tool for what's the wrong job for React Native's tool.
Like AR, like machine learning aside too, like can we say sure. stuff like that, right? Like,
yes.
I don't really know what the wrong tool is.
Like in your example with that like crazy complex like card flip thing. I mean,
yeah. And that's just
know,
one small
I would just do that in native. I'm like,
yeah.
Is that one element and that's it? And the rest of it's a standard app,
yeah.
right? Or is that going to happen everywhere?
Yeah.
And so that would help me make that decision.
Right.
And with the way like the pragmatic approach that Facebook takes, it's not like one or the other. You know, like you can run React Native in a native app. You can mount it and make one of the tabs React Native.
Right.
You know, that's possible. You can make one view React Native, right?
Hasn't Facebook always kind of messed with the hybrid model?
Yeah. Even now with like the successor to React called Reason they've been working on, right? This like OCaml derivative. You know, it's like
just still like based on React, so it's not like a complete shift.
Yeah. Well, so Reason is like the JavaScript grammar or something very similar to JavaScript that lives on the OCaml AST. So you can mix and match OCaml with Reason. And then what they've done is they've built bindings to React, right? Like Messenger.com, for example, started off as a platform that had JavaScript and had native this and native that, right? And then like React Native on top of that. And now as of the beginning of this year, it's 100% Reason, right? So like your website runs on Reason, your app runs on Reason, your server like runs on Reason or whatever, you know? Getting back to my point here, I admire the approach of being able to like slowly get somewhere, right? Like there's been a few like very famous like feature free rewrites, even in Chicago, right? Like, oh, we're gonna rewrite our platform, and that has right like
never goes well.
And it's you know I'm still waiting, right? I'm still waiting for the rewrite, right? Because what ends up happening is you have to continue delivering features.
Exactly. Yeah,
right?
we're onboarding a new salesperson to our team. And I just explained that to them today. Like, I've never, in my 30 years, I've never seen it go well.
So I saw with Parse, I remember they, Parse was that mobile like server platform, right?
Yeah.
And then it was written in Ruby. And then they did a rewrite to Go. And they saved 9% of the servers they turned off, right? It was amazing. And I think like
90%. Wow.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, Go is, it's a, you know, concurrent, multi-threaded, it's compiles, right?
Yeah.
Ruby is like the opposite.
And I say
the best
this,
way to put it.
And I say this as a Ruby developer, and our shop is Ruby on Rails.
I used to be a Ruby developer, now I code with Elixir, because Elixir is it's like Ruby, right? But it provides all those things that Go does, right? And so it's fast. And so, but then a month after, it seemed like a month after Parse released this rewrite with all these like bragging, you know, stats and news, they got acquired by Facebook and shut down.
I know. And they open sourced the JavaScript stuff and not the Go stuff.
Which you can still use Parse. Like
yeah.
There are Parse servers now.
Right.
The whole like ecosystem.
Yeah. So I want to make a point about, when is a good fit for React Native and, you know, versus Native? And a lot of times it's not all around what you're building. It's also around the teams that are going to build it too.
Sure.
You know, so companies will come to us because they have an existing web team. And you mentioned this before, your web developers want to go to React Native.
Yeah.
So they have an existing web team and they want to build something mobile, but their CTO doesn't want to hire a full, you know, Android team and an iOS team. It's a lot easier, you know. They're like, oh, let's just train, you know, take some of our web developers, that's Carmen, let's train them with React Native. And then you have a truly cross-platform team, right? So, you know, in this particular case, they need Ruby, you know, React and JavaScript, and then React Native.
So those developers, not only do they have to be trained up in React Native, they also have to be trained up in iOS and Android life cycles.
Yeah, sure. And that's where it gets a little tricky for us because, you know, it's like in the React Native world, you're spending, you know, pretty much all your time in JavaScript and you don't really need to worry about Android or Xcode besides hitting the play button. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes you do have to dip in there and that's when we're like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Right.
So you're like complete noob and, you know, you just bang your head against the wall for a while.
Yeah. That's all right. That's why I feel in React Native.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, I don't know how to solve it. That's an expo, you know, solving.
Yeah.
But there's obviously trade-offs, right?
Well, and like understanding it's the difference between web coding and platform coding,
mm-hmm.
right? Web coding, you're in a browser, you're in a pretty ubiquitous environment. You've kind of got free reign over what you can do. Memory's being constrained for you, all that. When you're on a platform, none of that. I mean, there's some at the operating system level, but you've got to kind of understand how that platform works and how you can interact with it. And I think that's, you know, when people spend like their careers as mobile developers and getting the platform stuff down and knowing the life cycle of things. I don't know where the fuck I was going with this.
That example, like if you have a web developer who's now React Native and trying to build that game or something, that's when they might run into problems like Stack Overflows or memory problems because they might not understand the actual what's happening on those
scenes. Right. The platform stuff is, you know, like even if you're a React developer, you understand the life cycles of component mounting, dismounting, animating, or whatever,
sure.
But you don't understand, you know, like the native APIs, right? Like in the web, you'll use a div, span, you know, like ptag, whatever, right? But in React Native, you'll use text, view, image, and they work a certain way, right? So the domain-specific language is the same, but the target is different, right?
Yeah.
Now, there's
two targets, iOS and Android.
Exactly, yeah.
Basically, we only test iOS and Android, like, after.
Yeah.
Well, it's because the emulator is so much better.
Oh,
iOS, right? It's a simulator.
Exactly. There have actually been, there's something called React Native Web, that you can use view, text, image, like all the primitives that you're used to in React Native, use them on the web too, which is nice. And all that view is a component that wraps a div, for example.
So it just does the opposite.
Yeah.
People come to me, they're asking, okay, how much code reuse is there between React Native and the web?
Yeah.
And although there is React Native Web where you can do this, like my answer is really, None. Really, these are separate apps. You're going to build your mobile app for that device of that size, right?
Yeah.
And then you're going to build your web app with the same technology. So you have the same team, the same principles there, the same coding standards, the way of doing it. But the actual code reuse is not really there. You might copy and paste some things and change them around, but they're two separate code bases. And you want to really design for that device.
Yeah.
There is something exciting that Expo's been working on, and it's sort of been undercover, but Expo Web using React Native Web. So what they're doing is they took your mobile app, right? They came up with a way to do like native navigation in the browser with like URLs updated correctly, you know, tab bars and the drawers or whatever. And it's effectively like a very large Webpack configuration file. Webpack is like the way that people bundle things on the web, right? So like all your images, assets, you know, like it's like if you're writing like React, it puts it through like the transpiler called Babel. It just kind of bundles everything together. And what they've done is they wrote like a very large one that like will go through like convert all the React Native views to React Native Web views, like convert all the animations like in native to like web animations. And that's something that they're like, they're trying to push. And like right now it's like very alpha, and who knows if it'll ever like become like a very good thing, but it delivers a PWA version of your app that just like gives you a link and you can just like share that around, right? So it's like very much in an alpha stage right now, but you know, like navigation works really well. The animations are nice. Like Evan Bacon created the Expogram, which is running an Instagram clone that he made that works on native iOS and Android, but also in the browser. You know, and it like supports the camera. You know, it supports the native APIs that the web supports, and then it gracefully degrades the ones that don't. You know, so just sort of like a interesting thing that they've been working on.
How are we doing on time?
40 minutes.
2 o'clock already.
Yeah, I think we should wrap up.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Totally.
Notifications, dude.
Sorry. Okay. Well, that's it. That's a wrap for the episode. We do have to do our picks.
All right. I got my pick.
All right. You can go first.
Oh, you want me to go first?
Yeah.
All right. I'm the non-technical pitch.
Which is totally fine.
Yeah. So I start my mornings by reading Harvard Business Review. And there's an article in this latest, I can't remember, what is this? August edition that I'm dying to get to. There's an article in there that I can't wait to read. I've read a snippet of it, and it's about helping employees navigate grief. It's a taboo subject at work. Like nobody talks about death. Nobody's allowed to talk about death. It's just one of those things you're not supposed to do. Yet you've got somebody on your team going through a loss, and how to help them navigate through that, and what you should do as a teammate and employer. So I'm dying to read that ad because I think it's going to expose some blind spots that I think we all have in our companies. So I'm excited about that. That was my non-technical one.
Which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
Welcome relief.
Yeah.
Thanks. So my pick is back to technical. It's basically around Expo Unimodules. So we're really excited about that technology because we've had to build Expo Kit apps for our clients, and the balance that we're hoping is going to work for us in the future is going to be a React Native standard app with Expo Unimodules built in, which basically you can take the Expo SDKs that you want, and only those SDKs, and plug them into React Native app. So it's kind of like the best of both worlds there.
Yeah, it's really exciting. I haven't messed around with it, but I'm glad that you brought that up.
Well, you know how it goes. We're just starting.
Yeah. So. My pick will be the Haris engine, which was just released today. And what it is it's a rewrite of the JavaScript engine that was used on Android. And what it ends up doing is instead of writing the end product being JavaScript, it actually compiles down to bytecode, which in turn offers a lot of great performance on the Android side. So far, folks that have been testing their apps with it, you know, like see things showing up faster, things are a little more fluid, and it's like an exciting step forward. And Facebook just open sourced that today. Well, that's a wrap. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for doing this, Peter. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.